on weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the two Johnnies in Africa for the afternoon entertainment. It is Thursday, March 14th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Ruby Walsh joins us with the latest from day 3 of the Cheltenham Festival. Former Ireland international Gavin Duffy has his say in Andy Farrell's team selection for Saturday's showdown with Scotland. And we'll hear from Ireland head coach Andy Farrell in football. We'll also hear from the Irish boss. John O'Shea was speaking to Tony O'Donoghue as he names his first Ireland squad for the friendly doubleheader. We'll go through all of that with journalist Fergal Brennan. And Rebecca Cray will also be having her say on all things men's international soccer, as well as previewing all of the League of Ireland Women's Premier Division action. A busy, busy hour ahead. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087-187-9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Well, D'Eve, I guess Falter Riv on show. Before we get chatting, competition time again this week on Game On. We have an incredible prize from AXA to give away. You and three of your friends could win a trip to see Liverpool FC women's team take on Chelsea at Prenton Park. It's all part of AXA's Being a Woman Shouldn't Be a Risk campaign. Across 2FM this week, we've been featuring stories of women who've turned challenges into triumphs. And thanks to AXA, you could win 4 hospitality match tickets to see Liverpool FC women's home game at Prenton Park against Chelsea on Sunday 28th of April, plus €2,000 to cover your flights and hotel. So for a chance to get your name into tomorrow's draw for this amazing prize, just answer the following question. Which Irish jockey was the first woman to win the Grand National at Aintree Racecourse? Text the word AXA, your answer, name and email address to 51552, and later on we'll pick one person randomly and their name will go into Friday's draw. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. C2FM.ie for all of the details. Rebecca Cray is here. Rebecca, not a bad prize to win. Liverpool Chelsea, be a decent match.
Pretty good. I'll be happy with that myself.
Absolutely. This weekend though, speaking of Chelsea women's team, Chelsea Arsenal, big one in the Women's Super League.
Yeah, massive. Arsenal away to Chelsea I think it's Friday.
Either. This weekend we'll cover
it. Yeah, this weekend, I'm trying to remember now. But anyway, yeah, huge. Chelsea on top at the minute with 37 points. City, 37 points as well. And then Arsenal coming in third on 34. So yeah, look, it's kind of a do or die for Arsenal. I'm obviously hoping for a win so I get a little trip across to celebrate in May, hopefully. But it could go either way and definitely to be a good one, yeah.
Tomorrow, 7 o'clock. So you can tune into Game On from 6 with Marie. And then, bang, Chelsea-Arsenal 7 o'clock. It'd be the perfect segue for that. Rebecca, you're sticking around because there's lots to get through in the League of Ireland Women's Premier Division, lots to get through in men's international soccer as well. But before all of that, a little bit earlier on, before we came on air, I spoke to Ruby Walsh. And before we hear from Ruby himself, let's hear how Tiupu won today's Stayers Hurdle for Gordon Elliott under Jack Kennedy.
Tiapu is at the last. Flooring Porter in second place is the danger. Home by the Lee is in third place, but Tiapu driven right out. Massive favourite Tiapu, third last year, goes two better this time around and gives Gordon Elliott his first winner of the week, ridden superbly by Jack Kennedy.
Listen, it's great to get a winner. We've been hitting the crossbar all week. The horses are running well. They can odds, no excuse. And there was no hard luck stories either, you know, but you know, to win the Stayers now is unbelievable. It's been a long couple of days, but look, the horses have been running well. As I said, there's no horse didn't win, they should have won, you know what I mean? They've all run their races, but yeah, look, it's a great place and just to have a winner over late.
And just finally, you always happy with how Jack was going?
Ah, yeah, I was a bit anxious at the top of the hill when he missed the second last, and then we probably got there a bit soon then because he had to give him a squeeze. But listen, I always confidence in Jack. He's a world-class jockey and you don't have to tell him what to do, and he's a nice lad too.
So that was Gordon Elliott speaking after Tiupu's win in the Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle. And Ruby, let us begin our conversation there. Good news for Gordon Elliott. It's probably slim good news from an Irish perspective, but good news nonetheless in that one.
Yeah, good news for Gordon is right, and for Jack. The English were in comeback mode today, Shane. But look, that was one of their biggest chances of the week. Tiupu in the Stayers, Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle. That obviously given him a long break since he won the Hatton's Grace in Ferry House back in December. But they had him absolutely spot on today. It was a tactical enough race. Keith Dunne, who gave Flooring Porter a really good ride, and he didn't go quick in front, so it did turn into a bit of a dash. But Jack always had Tiupu in a really good position. Produced him off the home turn to tackle Flooring Porter, and he put it to bed nicely. He's a horse with a huge future as well, Shane. He's only a 7-year-old. He stays really well. He's very young, complicated, and big winner for Cullen Tra. The horses were running well, but they just weren't having any winners. But they put that right today.
Absolutely. So good news at 3:30 for Gordon Elliott and Tiupu, as you mentioned there. However, big shock at the race at 4:50. Golden Ace upsetting Brighter Days Ahead, Ruby.
Yeah, and Jade DeGrugy, the race that was billed as a match between Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott. Gordon's mare was second, Brighter Days Ahead. Jade DeGrugy was fourth. One of Henry the Bromhead's got in the middle, birdie or bust, but it was all about Golden Ace for Lorcan Williams and Jeremy Scott. Jeremy's a small enough trainer down in Somerset, and Lorcan Williams is probably, I think he's second jockey or joint second jockey, and Paul Nicholls is behind Harry Cobden. But a big, big day for them, and great for Jeremy Scott. He's a gentleman. He trains Dashiell Drasher as well, who ran well in the Stayers Hurdle. Doesn't have a big string, but given the talent, and he's able to hit the target. And it was a really cool ride from Lorcan Williams. It was a race that turned into a bit of a sprint. There was no real emphasis on stamina, and Golden Ace was the fastest mare, and she did it well.
She absolutely did do it extremely well. Protectorat won the Ryanair with Envoy Alain finishing a gallant second. Were you surprised with that?
No, I wasn't actually. I think the trip really suited Protectorat. He ran in a couple of Gold Cups and didn't quite get the 3.25 mile trip of a Gold Cup, but dropped back to the Ryanair, the intermediate distance. He came to the fore. I thought Rachel had timed her challenge perfectly on Envoy Alain, even switched out to join Harry Skelton going to the second last, delivered her challenge on the run to the last, but Envoy Alain on the soft ground couldn't keep going. Protectorat dug in, and it was a great win for Dan and Harry Skelton. I mean, they had two winners here yesterday afternoon, Shane, and they backed it up again today with two more. I mean, terrific going, and you have to tip your cap to them. They started together with their dad, Nick, of course, who's an Olympic gold medalist, Olympic gold medal winning show jumper. But they're good at what they do.
They absolutely are, extremely good. Broader picture then, it was probably a day for British trained runners, but also a day for football fans. Harry Redknapp and Alex Ferguson will be both happy men.
Yeah. All over everything. Obviously, Sir Alex had Mon Morale in the Perth Temps, Harry Cobden and Paul Nicholls getting a winner, and then he owns a share in Protectorat as well before Harry Redknapp won the set third last with Shake Him Up Harry. Well named, trained by Ben Pauling, ridden by Ben Jones, and yeah, they were fairly happy. There was plenty of football stars around today, Shane. Brian Robson was here, as well as Harry Redknapp and Sir Alex and Sam Allardyce. Big football contingent around, and look, he was a good winner, Shake Him Up Harry, and both Sir Alex and Harry Redknapp got a good kick out of having winners here.
I can absolutely imagine that they did. Obviously, the narrative of Cheltenham so far was it's just Irish domination, that job's done, there's no chance for these British trainers. I saw Paddy Power had a sneaky welcome to the home of British horse racing, Airbnb to Irish racing at the moment on the entrance to Cheltenham. But does this kind of show that it isn't all one-way traffic today, or is this just a once-off in your opinion?
No, it's not a once-off. And you have to look at history, Shane. And look, history has a habit of repeating itself in all walks of life. And, you know, you look back, Ireland had dominance in national hunt racing in the 60s into the 70s. It went for a long time, and we had dominance again now from 2016 all the way to here. But the wheel will turn and the cycle keeps going. And, you know, I actually found it a bit, I wouldn't say frustrating, but disappointing yesterday, the narrative that, like, what's wrong, it's broken, it's you know, it's all negative. And I don't think there was a need to be so negative yesterday. I mean, what Willie Mullins did was amazing, and yes, there's a lot of investment in Irish racing, and it's something we should be proud of, but it won't always be that way. And, you know, it was no different, I suppose, in every sport. You have good times and bad times, and it'll swing back to the British. And so I just hope that a lot of the Irish people are enjoying it, because it won't always be this way.
No, it's certainly cyclical. Did that narrative take away from the joy of yesterday in any way?
It kind of felt like it did. Yeah. Now, I think the crowd was down a bit too, and that's obviously a cost of living thing. Racing is like every sport, it's a discretionary spend, and not everybody has a discretionary spend at the moment. So, like, there were definitely, crowd was down, atmosphere was a bit down, and
you know, I think when you trot a negative narrative, a lot of people cotton onto it, whereas today it was much more positive. Crowds were back up. And again, the crowd will be up again tomorrow. It'll be sold out. But, yeah, I just think that sometimes everybody overreacts in the negative and the positive, and at the moment it just seems to be a bit negative, and I don't think there need to be.
Well, then on a positive note, what was your highlight today? That atmosphere seemed to be back today, you know, there at the racecourse.
Well, I'd say from a punter's point of view, they were fairly happy to see Tuhupu winning, and it was great to see Jack Kennedy ride a winner. He's a brilliant rider who's had plenty of bad luck. But I thought Dan and Harry Skelton, two brothers, they, you know, a couple of handicaps yesterday and two big grade ones today. A great decision to drop Grey Dawning down in trip and avoid Factor File, and, you know, bring a Protectorat back to win a Ryanair. And even with Harry, who at times has made mistakes as a rider, to watch him execute it perfectly on Protectorat, I thought it was great to watch.
Ruby, then let's look ahead at tomorrow. Obviously, the big one tomorrow. So what way are you siding? What way are you looking at this tomorrow?
Look, the Gold Cup, I've always been a huge fan of Galloping the Champs, and I haven't changed my opinion on him. I think the ground will suit him, soft ground. I think he handles that well. He seems to be in great form. Look, Willie's horses are in great form. I don't see any negatives for Galloping the Champ, and, you know, I think he's going to be really, really hard to beat. And I think with the rain that's fallen today, right now it's lashing rain here in Cheltenham, that'll put some moisture back in the ground, and the race will be dependent on stamina. You know, Gordon's horses are in great form. I could see Jerry Cullum running a big race. I think Fast or Slow will run a good race. Maybe Corrick Rambler for Lucinda Russell. He's a Grand National winner and he's a dual winner here at the Cheltenham Festival. He might come into the reckoning too. But yeah, I think Galloping the Champ, Ireland have won a lot of the last 8 Gold Cups. This one might make it 9. I think that'd be incredible.
Oh, absolutely, it would be.
They've won 8 of 9. Native River was in there in the middle, but they've won 8 of the last 9 Gold Cups, so I think we make it 9 from 10, Shane. That'd be good going.
Most certainly. Not the only grade one tomorrow. Half one, the Triumph Hurdle. Where do you see this one going, Ruby?
I think it's a tricky contest. Obviously, Sergino, who was a long anti-post favourite for a long time with the Nicky Henderson string the way they are, he's out, so he's a non-runner. I find it difficult to split them up. Willie has a load of them. But again, I think with the rain falling, I wouldn't be surprised if Bunting outran his price at a big price. Paul rides Stormheart, Danny's on Cargis. He had plenty of chances, but it wouldn't shock me if Bunting sprang a bit of a surprise there.
And the race before the Gold Cup, the Albert Bartlett Novices Hurdle, Ruby.
Yeah, again, and, you know, form develops all the time, but the Dancing City split Ballyburn and Sladesteel. He was second in a bumper that Ballyburn won and Sladesteel was third in at the Punchestown Festival last year. So, look, he won at the Dublin Racing Festival. You have to respect his form. But I know in Claus Sutton, everyone's a big fan of Reading Tommy Wrongs, and we think he's a fairly solid favourite. But Dancing City is very strong backup to have for Reading Tommy Wrong.
Okay, what else should we keep an eye on tomorrow?
You have the County Hurdle as well. I thought it was a trappy affair, as it always is. King of Kingsfield is favourite for Gordon Elliott and Jack Kennedy, but I think Zenta for Mark Walsh and Willie Mullins could outrun her odds at a big price. Wouldn't have a massively strong opinion, Shane, on the Fox Hunters. Obviously, David Christie trains a horse called Fern's Lock, small trainer from the north of Ireland. He'll have plenty of supporters, and a lot of people will be on It's on the Line too for Emmett Mullins, who was recently bought by JP McManus, so he'd had to have a squeak in that. The second last race is the Mrs. Paddy Power Chase, strong favourite there, Dino Blue for Willie Mullins, and she looks like she might take a bit of beating. She has Limerick Lace and Allegory Devassi as her biggest rivals. And the last race then is the Martin Pipe for conditional jockeys, for younger jockeys, give them a chance. And when I look at that, I think Key to Bourbon of Willie Mullins's. He's a very poor price, but I think he is an outstanding chance.
Okay, good stuff. Do we have a winner at 5:30 yet, Ruby? No?
And I know the way you're thinking. Who's your strong favourite? He's over, all over. Derek O'Connor won the last for JP McManus and Gavin Cromwell.
Happy days. Well, Ruby, just before I do let you go, I never knew you had... Well, I knew you had the racing commentary in you. I didn't know you had the voice of an angel. An ITV social media clip. You've gone viral singing Kaiser Chiefs.
Oh, what?
You were singing the Kaiser Chiefs.
Stop. Oh, my God. It's barbaric, isn't it? Good luck.
I urge anyone to check it out on social media. Ruby Walsh will be checking in with you tomorrow.
Not to check it out.
Mind yourself, yeah. Ruby. Thanks very much.
Bye bye.
Game on. Racing. Game on.
Golf.
Now, just before we take a break, to update you on the Players' Championship, because it is going well for Rory McIlroy. He is currently, he's 7-under, first round. He shot a 65. He holds the lead jointly with Xander Schauffele. Nick Taylor, one shot behind on 6-under. So Rory was out early. So good news for Rory in terms of other Irishmen. Seamus Power is 1-under through 3. And Shane Lowry is just about to tee off, actually, as well. So good news for Rory at the very early stages of the Players' Championship at Sawgrass. We're taking a short break then. We're chatting rugby with former Ireland international Gavin Duffy.
RTE
2FM.
Game on.
Rugby.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Gavin Duffy, former Connacht and Ireland international, is on the line. Before I chat to Gavin, though, Ireland head coach Andy Farrell has named an unchanged starting 15 for Saturday's final Six Nations meeting with Scotland at the Aviva Stadium. Winger Calvin Nash is in line to play after coming through the return to play protocols and starts on the wing. Kieran Frawley, who had also been following the return to play protocols, has not been included among the replacements, with Farrell reverting back to a 5-3 split. Gary Ringrose is named in the 23 shirt for his first appearance of the championship, while Harry Byrne also comes onto the bench with Ian Henderson missing out on selection. As I mentioned, we are going to chat to Gavin, but beforehand, let's hear from the Irish boss, Andy Farrell. He was speaking with our own Michael Corcoran.
Andy, in terms of your team selected for this week, how happy are you that as an unchanged 15, Calvin Ash has come through this week all right?
Yeah, he always seemed good to go. He was always in good spirits. Obviously, he had to go through the protocols, etc. Certainly did his bits of training at the beginning of the week and a full session on Wednesday without any contact. But passed with flying colours, so he's fit and round to go. And so is everyone else, for that matter. We've got a nice, fit, healthy squad. Some real good players who are unfortunate to miss out, but in helping their team prepare today, this week, it's been top draw from the whole squad, really. So I suppose the selected 23 have a job to do to represent those people as well.
You've gone for a 5-3 split on the bench. You've done 6-2 before, mind you. You've done 5-3 before as well, but it's a matter of trying to get the job done this week.
Yeah, obviously with Kieran Frawley, who covers a good few positions, he was out early within in the week and back at Leinster, so it was obvious that he wasn't going to play in that regard. He covers many positions, and if you're going to go with a 6-2, you have to have that type of versatility as a player. This time round, obviously Harry's covering 10, doesn't quite cover as many positions, but Gary Ringrose does at the same time, so that's why we go with the 5-3 split. And unfortunately for somebody like Ian Henderson, he misses out.
Are you happy that you've dealt with last week and the aftermath of it, and your regrets that there may have been there from a squad point of view? You've drawn a line in the sand. It's time to move on.
Oh, we certainly do that. I mean, there is a process that you go through. You know, for people to say that you get over it straight away, you have to have a drawn out process at the beginning of the week where you show the bits that you're able to on up to and move on together. That's coaches and players together now. So and once you start owning up to and understanding the reasons why, then you tends to focus the mind a little bit more, doesn't it, to move on. And we certainly turn the page and ready for what is going to be a huge day for Irish rugby. You know, have a look at the history of Irish rugby and the competition that we're playing in, going for back-to-back championships is like Enseith, really, isn't it? You know, that it's not done, it's not found very much. So a special occasion coming up for all.
It's important that people don't lose sight of that fact. I mean, you know, there's no Grand Slam there to be won as a result of last week, but back-to-back Six Nations championships is a huge achievement by any team.
Well, yeah, I mean, you get asked the question every single year, don't you, about the competition. What's your aim? Your aim is to win every game coming, and if a Grand Slam's able to come along with that, then you're pretty fortunate. maybe a bit of luck along the way as well. They're very hard to do, but the reality is that everyone wants to be in with a shout on the last day, and we're in pole position, I suppose. There are five other teams that would love to be in our position, you know, going into the last weekend at the front, and everything to play for.
The fact that Scotland last week against Italy in Rome, not suspecting that, but that, does it make him that bit more of a challenge, more challenging this week?
Oh, he definitely does. Same with England last week, losing to Scotland a couple of weeks before that at Murrayfield. It concentrates the mind, as I've said before. So they'll be hurting, but so will we. We're playing at home, St Patrick's weekend, in front of our own fans. It doesn't get any better than that.
And just a final question overall, in terms of the 15, how much thought, or was there an awful lot of thought went into the selection of the 15, or how important was it that the people who were there last week get a chance to show what they really can do this week?
Well, they're there and selected because they're the right people for the job, first and foremost. Some of them are disappointed with the performance from last week. Sometimes you miss a chance to give them another chance. They're here to be able to do that, put the best foot forward, not just for the team, but for the rest of the squad, the fans alike, and the rest of the nation. So I think we've all got a duty to pull together on Saturday and make it a special day.
So, Gavin Duffy, hearing the thoughts of Andy Farrell there, would you agree with his selection that not change it, avoided the urge to tinker with it, and that the lads will have a bit of a point to prove after the disappointment of last week?
Yeah, how you doing, Shane? Yeah, I think it's a fairly settled squad and a fairly settled 15 that Andy Farrell's gone with. I think right from the offset of the Six Nations against France, he was in a luxury position where he could pick his what he would have thought was his best 15, and he stuck with that 15 right throughout with France, England, and now Scotland. It was more or less the same 15 bar the change for Hugh Keenan, who was injured against Wales, and then obviously he tinkered a little bit more against Italy. So this seems to be his preferred 15, and when it's been available, he's selected it in its entirety. So again, he's maybe chopped and changed in terms of a 6-2-4-3 split, but this is certainly his strongest 15 that I'd imagine he'd like to get out on the field this weekend.
You've obviously played at the highest level. What will training have been like after that defeat to England, knowing that they will want to redeem themselves now against Scotland?
I think definitely, as much as, you know, that you'd always say, look, and he referred to it there, the Grand Slam is kind of the icing on the cake. Mm. And if the opportunities fall in the right way and you get a bit of luck, you know, you win a Grand Slam. But this team undoubtedly went out to win a Grand Slam again. Like, that's the level they've been at. They went out to retain their title. But any year when you play France and England away from home, you got to say it's going to be a tough year. So I think they'd have been very, very disappointed on Saturday night. I'd imagine Sunday it was very low key, and then Monday morning right back in. But I don't think it would have been perhaps as harsh as the Scottish review on Monday morning, having lost to Italy. I think it'd be more a level-headed approach, and very much a case of, look, lads, we still have this in our control. We can win a championship. And as you alluded to there, it's not very often that Ireland are in a position where they can win back-to-back championships.
Yeah, it is still a great achievement to achieve a Six Nations championship, or not even a back-to-back Six Nations championship. Should we be wary of a wounded Scotland, though, considering the manner of that defeat to Italy?
Oh, definitely. I think without doubt. I think that the Six Nations is kind of renowned for it as well. I don't know whether it's because of us Celts, we're a bit hot-blooded, or we're very emotional people, I think. And no matter who you are playing, we always think, you know, we'll outfight them, or we'll have more emotional, or we'll have a little bit of baggage or a chip on our shoulder. And I think this year, again, has proven that in terms of the results. It's topsy-turvy this year. You know, teams beating each other right the way through. And Scotland, without doubt, will feel that they'll have a reaction this weekend. And the fact that they lost to Italy, I think, makes them even more dangerous. And yet they have something positive to focus on as well. It's the first time that they beat Wales away from home since 2002. And it's the first time in a long time that they're actually in a position to win a triple crown as well come the last day of the season. They haven't won a triple crown since 1990. I don't think any of this current squad were born back then. It was a stat I saw today. So they have something positive to play for, as well as getting a reaction from the really poor defeat, which was last Saturday. Again, and in the manner of defeat, in terms of how they put themselves in the position where they looked like they were well in control on a couple of occasions. You know, they were 14-3 up, they were 22-10 up, I think, at one stage, and then they conceded 21 unanswered points. So they'll be coming at it from two different angles, I suppose, from one of them being bitterly disappointed, but yet trying to flick that around and say, look, lads, we are making progress, you know, with that Welsh result, for example, that they could have beaten France, backed it up with a beaten England at home, and now they have a chance to win a triple crown. And it brings us back to the 1990s. We weren't winning triple crowns, never mind back-to-back championships. So you can see maybe how important a triple crown would be for Scotland.
So if we are to expect a backlash from Scotland, then what are you hoping to see? What will Ireland need to do to ensure they do get over the line and get the championship in the bag?
I think if you again look back to the England game and really dissect it, like, you can look at some of the positives or some of the negatives in a way of shaping a narrative as well. Like, you know, when England got that try within the first 2 minutes, it was off a big collision with Calvin Nash, and thankfully, you know, he's back to take his place in the wings again. But a big collision, he was down injured, and England went straight down that blind side where he should have been defending and created an overlap and scored in the corner. And you kind of think, well, if Ireland were back to that 15 man and Calvin Nash could get back into position, they wouldn't have conceded that. And then when they conceded the second try, I think Gibson Park was on the wing at that stage. So they were a bit of out of shape, a bit of out of kilter with the 6-2 split not falling their way in terms of luck, in terms of replacements. So they're not 100 million miles off. I think everyone appreciated that. I think everyone appreciated that England were at the very, very best, probably the best they've been in 3 or 4 years. So from an Ireland's perspective, it's the small little details around the line-out. They can't afford to give Scotland into the game through missed line-outs and like they did against England, where the third or fourth try was off a mistake from an Irish line-out. So there are little things like that where they'll feel, look, we're not a million miles off, but certainly I think in terms of defence, they need everyone on their feet. They need to be going forward in the collisions. That's no different than any other game before. So I think it'll be back to the small nitty-gritty details of, you know, getting up off the ground, getting up off the line, cutting down Finn Russell. And interestingly enough, it'll be interesting to see what Scotland do, because for the first three games, they kicked the ball more than any other team in the competition. And yet against Italy, they completely reversed that and they passed and ran a lot more than they had done in the previous three games. And that worked for them for the 60 minutes. But they'd feel themselves, and Gilchrist, the captain, has said they made a lot of unforced errors then when, after 60 minutes, they kind of they got a bit loose. Now, he didn't say it wasn't a mental breakdown, but they said they just got a bit loose in terms of how they were playing. So it'd be interesting to see what way Scotland approach this game as well. Will they try and steamroll Ireland? I don't think they can, like they did against Italy. Or will they go back to a bit more pragmatic game like they did in the first three games that got them some success in terms of results?
If it is going to be pragmatic, you mentioned lineouts there in particular. And there were some calls for Ryan Bear to start. Peter O'Mahony, obviously his captain, he keeps his place. How much of a selection headache do you feel that one in particular was for Andy Farrell?
Again, I think I go back to, you know, the stars of Six Nations, what was his best 15? And he kind of nailed his colours to the mast in that regard and picking Peter O'Mahony as captain. I think he's a type of coach as well that does reward loyalty or is very loyal to his players. And certainly he'd understand that the players were hurting from last weekend. And he'd say, look, lads, you've gotten us results before. I've no doubt you can fix the wrongs, I suppose, or fix the result from last Saturday. But it had to be a big call between the 6-2 split. Obviously, he mentioned there Frawley is out, so that limited options maybe in terms of the backline cover. But it had to be a big call with Ryan Bear playing so well when he comes on. And even in terms of second row, you'd imagine he'd go straight into second row. If there's any other injuries in the back row then, or in the second row, Conan or Darris will push in, and one of them will fill the number 8 spot. But I think Peter Mahoney is probably the one that was most under pressure for this week. But again, how many times has he been written off over the last number of years? And I've no doubt that emotionally he will bring that emotional charge that's required on Saturday to match Scotland.
It's going to be an emotional evening on Saturday. When it's all said and done, Gavin, come Saturday night, will Ireland be Six Nations champions?
I think they will be, yeah. I think again, looking across the last four games, I think they've played the best rugby consistently across the four games. I think they were beaten by a very, very, very good English performance. You know, their defence is the best in the competition by 40, 50 points. They've the attack is the best in the competition by 40-50 points. They have a points difference of around 80 points, I think, on the next closest. All the stats would suggest they have been the most consistent team in the competition, and I think we'll get a result, or we'll get a performance on Saturday, I think, against a Scotland team that, quite frankly, I don't think they have any love lost against them either. So 9 wins in a row, and I think that'll be 10 come Saturday evening.
Well, hopefully it is an old school Titanic tussle, whatever the outcome. Gavin Duffy, thank you very much for joining us. 4:45 kickoff for Ireland Scotland in the Aviva Stadium, matching here live commentary on RT Radio 1's Saturday Sport. We are taking a short break, but do stay with us because we're going to hear from Ireland boss John O'Shea. Fergal Brennan standing by to chat football, as is Rebecca Cray.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we chat football. Fergal Brennan and Rebecca Cray are standing by, but before we chat to our guests, let us hear from the interim Ireland head coach, John O'Shea. He was speaking with Tony O'Donoghue earlier today, and the conversation began with the process of squad selection for John O'Shea.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. Brilliant experience. Look, it's the most important thing for me is the squad that we picked in general. There's a great mixture. In terms of the experience and the younger players that we have. So I feel it's a nice balance, and ultimately hopeful of getting two good results against Belgium and Switzerland. Look, they're two great games, really. And as you mentioned, we're just fully focused on that. And it was great. Obviously, you're keeping an eye on players. For example, obviously I've worked with Jake O'Brien a bit with the under-21 team, and to obviously keep an eye on him, the level he's playing at in France. Tough opposition every week for him, and they've had some difficult moments, Leon, this year, but to be fair to Jake, he stood up to the challenge and kept himself in the team, which has been great to see.
And scoring goals as well.
Yeah, exactly. Look, he's a danger on set pieces, definitely, but look, first and foremost, it's great to have him involved in the squad, and it's a testament to the kid himself, the fact he obviously went over to Crystal Palace and then went out to the team in Belgium, Molenbeek, and then obviously got bought by Leon then, so it showed the type of character he is. He's not afraid to get stuck in and get working hard and show that he's able to mix, and his French is coming on as well.
You did some missing there yourself, so didn't you? You left United and went to
Belgium. Yeah, went out to Belgium, out to Antwerp, and look, it's a great experience, not only football-wise, but you mature a lot too as a person as well. So, and that's what I mean, it's a testament to kind of his character that he's been able to do that, and obviously not only that, he's staking, get himself into the team, stay in the team, and now in the Ireland men's senior team.
As you mentioned, Belgium news this morning that Kevin De Bruyne isn't in their squad, a decent squad nonetheless, but not to have to face him and the ability he has, maybe that's a little good sign?
Maybe, but look, it's one of them things, only whatever team Belgium are going to pick, the squad that they have picked, they're building and preparing for the Euros in the summer, so we know it's a talented squad, and whatever 11 they pick, it'll be a team generally playing in all the top leagues in Europe, Champions League, Europa League, etc. too, so it'll be a challenge, but look, the best thing for us is we have to focus on ourselves. That'll be the most important thing in the week. He's in the top three, I think, Tony, definitely he's in the conversation, and I'm sure they'll be disappointed in one way, but obviously they might have had an agreement or something beforehand that they want to make sure he's ready for the summer as well.
Talking about Sammy Smodics, you went to Blackburn, you had a chat with him. Was it ever in doubt that he was going to come back to Ireland?
No, I don't think so. It was obviously that the game I went as well, Michael Obafemi was featured too, so got his goal, Sammy scored as well. Any conversations I've had, Sammy's been really positive about coming in. Can't wait to come into the squad and we see how he goes.
Because he's on form, isn't he?
21 in the league, I think 27 in total. So look, he's just hope it continues for him. The good thing is with the attacking options we have, not only that, the attacking midfield options we have, there's lots of flexibility in it, Tony, and good options for me and good headaches to have as well.
Another new call-up, Finnis Ans. Tell us a bit about him, because not a lot of people would know that much about him, although he was
at under 21. Yeah, obviously I worked with Finn with under 21s when I was working under Jim Crawford. Really talented, technical player, real good technical player. Obviously, I've spoken to Michael Carrick about him as well, because Michael signed him just in the window just gone. He was having a great season for Plymouth, goal scoring midfielder too. So, look, he'll be a fantastic addition to the squad, I think, and he's buzzing, he can't wait to get in and showcase his talents too, but Plenty of competition in that area as well.
And is midfield in particular an area that you'd like to bolster and strengthen?
Yeah, look, it's a healthy competition area. Unfortunately, say Alan Brown is missing out this time. He's having to have a minor operation just to get himself back to full fitness. And look, it's one of those areas. Thankfully, Josh Cullen is back playing again with Burnley, which is great. And obviously, Will Smallbone has been excellent for Southampton all season too. So look, there's plenty of options. Jason Knight, captain of Bristol City. There's plenty of healthy competition in midfield.
You picked your first squad. Are you looking forward to picking your first 11?
Yeah, look, it really is, because you generally sometimes the team picks itself, whether that be just in terms of, but there's, as I mentioned earlier, healthy competition now in the squad, and it's great, because the big thing you want when the players are coming in, that they've been, a lot of the time they're playing at their clubs, they're fitting well, and they're looking forward to coming in.
So that was John O'Shea speaking to Tony O'Donoghue a little bit earlier on. Fergal Brennan, if I come to you first, as we heard there, Sammy Smadox, Jake O'Brien, Finn Izzaz all in the squad. Is this an Ireland squad that excites you?
Yeah, I just think, given the situation with John O'Shea being interim boss, the obviously ongoing uncertainty over what's going to happen in April, the anticipation that the permanent manager will be announced then, I just kind of think there's an opportunity for everybody involved, including John O'Shea himself, just to come in, a fresh setup, effectively have a crack at Belgium and Switzerland. They're not competitive games. Belgium, as he mentioned in his own piece there, are building towards the Euros in the summer, so that they'll want to get a look at some of their players. But from an Irish perspective, that's also the case, because there's an opportunity now for players who were maybe on the edge of Stephen Kenny's last couple of squads to now come in and say, there's a new manager in charge, albeit on the short term for the moment, and then for the long term further down the line, I want to be involved. And Smodics is probably the best example of that. His form at Blackburn's been brilliant. Them as a team are not in the playoff running, which is no reflection on his individual performances. He's been absolutely superb for them. And I think the kind of freshness and the energy and just the finishing that he has, I know some people will look at it and say it's the Championship, it's not the Premier League, but he can certainly add that. He's got a bit of versatility about his game. He can play a little bit deeper, or he can play through the middle on his own. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he adds, and I think we're all looking forward to seeing what John O'Shea is going to do, because he's been very calm whenever he's been asked, and he's not really given a lot away. It's going to be two very interesting games to come.
Most certainly will. And similar, I suppose, with Blackburn and Sammy Smodox, Leon aren't going well in League One at the moment, and Jake O'Brien has been given an opportunity and he's been starring for them as well. There's also returns to the squad, Fergal, for Michael Obafemi, Robbie Brady, Callum O'Dowda, and great to see captain Seamus Coleman included for the first time since that 1-0 defeat to France a year ago. So there is that bit of experience blended in with the new faces.
There is, and that is important, particularly given the setting that John O'Shea is going into, because there is this idea of, well, what is the direction? What's going to happen next? Players who will be wanting to push their case to be involved in the next squad, which is probably going to be a different person in charge if we're to follow the line of thinking at the moment. So you do need those characters that have been around for a long time, and Seamus Coleman will be obviously the outstanding candidate in that. He's still captain, he's still massively influential within the squad. He's not been playing as much for Everton as John O'Shea or himself would have liked of late. Sean Dyche has been kind of using him sparingly. He's had one or two minor injuries in the last couple of months as well. But I would expect him to play at least one of the friendlies, just to kind of give that balance to players when they come in. Particularly looking at someone like Jake O'Brien, who'll be playing alongside him to help him. Jake O'Brien's had a lot of help from the experienced players at Lyon that have been a big part of why he's developed into the player that he has this season. So I think it will be a mix across the two games. I don't think it will be the same team for both games. Raph mentioned, I think it was last week on the show, that Kelleher and Bazunu will probably get a game each. And I think we will see a lot of rotation between the Belgium game and the Switzerland game.
Yeah, Rebecca, on that point, how big of an opportunity do you feel this is for players to prove a point to themselves, to show what they can offer, to play under a new management, a new manager, albeit on an interim basis? But they're going to be tough challenges, both against Belgium on Saturday, March 23rd, and then indeed Tuesday, the following Tuesday against Switzerland. That they'll want to go out and showcase that they do have talent, they do have quality, and they can show themselves on the biggest stage.
Yeah, I suppose it's a fresh start, you know, for everyone, albeit if it's two games for John O'Shea, you know, to prove himself as, you know, an elite coach. And obviously the players that have come in recently, in the likes of Azaz, you know, Smodic, I know he's been in squads already, but
until hopefully you actually see him play.
I know, and unless he gets on that pitch, I won't believe he's staying around. But look, he's a really exciting player, as is Azaz, you know, really creative, get to goals. I think it's probably one of the more exciting squads we've seen in a while. Obviously, the likes of Evan Ferguson, I don't know what's going on with him at Brighton recently, but look, hopefully he gets back on form. Adam Ida as well at Celtic has done really well in recent weeks and months. So, yeah, look, it's definitely a time for a lot of the youth to come through and prove their point.
A lot of positivity, and particularly Fergal Rebecca mentions the attacking players, and it's great to see Mikey Johnson banging form for West Brom as well. Tony posed a question to John O'Shea there about the midfield, and John was kind of mentioned healthy competition, albeit healthy competition, but is that perhaps the weak point of the squad?
Yeah, as much as kind of nobody wants to hear that word weak, I think it is. I think it's more connected with this idea that everybody realised in the last 6 months of Stephen Kenny that it was a problem position. Both the players that were there and the kind of system that they were playing in, just nothing really seemed to fit right. There was a lot of players who weren't really certain over their role or what they were being expected to do. And some of the names that he's mentioned, he is trying to put a positive spin on it. But unfortunately, there is a bit of a concern in that sense. Josh Cullen is back in the Burnley team, but it's a Burnley team that are almost certainly going to be relegated. Jason Knight has been impressive for Bristol City, but again, it's not in the Premier League. I know I said that Smodic's form shouldn't be taken into account, just shouldn't be discounted, sorry, just because it's the Championship. But it is different when it's a striker banging in goals and a midfielder that you're kind of looking at and thinking, are you in a position to push on and go and play Premier League football? So I think that's where we might see a bit of a change in terms of system. I think John might look to play a tighter midfield. Maybe instead of having Josh Cullen sitting on his own, he might play two players deep and look to control the game a bit more, have an extra body in there so you don't get overrun, particularly against the Belgium, albeit with no Kevin De Bruyne. They've still got players that can cut through you and run through you if you don't have enough cover in those sorts of positions. So I was actually personally disappointed that Joe Hodge didn't get the shout, but obviously he's important for the under-21s. He's a player that I've seen quite a bit of this season and continues to impress me. And I do think if he does go back to Wolves this summer and doesn't get in, there's the potential that another Premier League side might come in for him because he's a very, very talented player. But he's not involved this time round.
Well, I believe Joe Hodge and Andrew Moran possibly might join up with the squad for the Switzerland match, but they won't be there for that Belgium match. And there are some good players that were named in Jim Crawford's 21s team that hopefully will be senior internationals sooner rather than later. We're going to leave our men's national team chat there. Fergal Brennan, thank you so much for joining us. Just to note, kickoff times have been announced for the women's national team. Ireland will host England on the 9th of April, to Tuesday night at 7:30 in the Aviva, and then May 31st, the Friday night, Ireland-Sweden at 7:30 as well in the Aviva Stadium. Kickoff times for all of the other matches are TBC. However, we do plan to bring you live coverage of all of the women's qualifiers here on Game On over the course of a couple of months. Friday, April 5th, the first match, and 16th of July, the final match. Rebecca Cray, you're still with us. We do have team news in from Liverpool. Actually, Caoimhín Keller will start this evening. So good news. Caoimhín will play in Liverpool's Europa League match against Sparta Prague. West Ham currently 2-0 up at home to Freiburg, 2-1 on aggregate in that one. However, Rebecca, we're going to chat League of Ireland Women's Premier Division, because round one kicked off last weekend and it threw up a couple of surprises, it must be said. Looking back, Athlone were defeated by Galway 2-0. Ken Kiernan and his youthful Bowside defeated Wexford in Wexford 2-0. Peamount were also winners by 2-0 away to Cork. DLR Waves drew 1-1 with Shamrock Rovers. Rovers needed a late penalty to equalise in that one, and it was goalless in Tolka Park between Shelburne and Sligo Rovers. What's the most surprising result out of those, in your opinion, Rebecca Cray?
Yeah, I was quite shocked looking at the DLR game, you know, the fact that they were winning 1-0 for so long, and obviously Rovers came back with that Anya O'Gorman penalty. I don't know if there was, love to see a stat to see the last time Anya maybe didn't score in the opening day of the league. But I think for me, the most surprising, I don't want to diss any team, but but Galway beating that loan 2-0. You know, Galway have always been that team who have been in and around the mix, you know, of the top three, and it's kind of obviously paid dividends in their first game with the likes of Julianne Russell being on fire. You know, she's 2 weeks out from being 33 and she still looks like the annoying, you know, 17-year-old that I used to be chasing shadows of. I know I'm only 2 years older than her, but still she was quality and has been, I think, one of the most consistent, even after having a baby, and so be it. But Jenna Slattery and Niamh Dawson getting the goals there. But some decent performances across the league to start off.
Yeah, so Bowes, Galway and Piemont all with wins. And we mentioned this in our preview last week as well, that this is going to be competitive, that teams are going to take points off everyone. And it's cliched, but that's what it is going to be, because the standard is just steadily increasing week on week, and we're going to see more of that this weekend, I would imagine.
Most definitely. You know, I think, as you said, it is a cliche to say that, look, it's the most open.
But it's true. It is.
And like I say it every year, it's just getting better and better. And I think everyone would be probably shocked at the nil-all with Shells and Sligo. But I said it last week, you know, dark horses will be the likes of, you know, your Sligo's, Galway's coming through.
That's a really well-drilled Tommy Hewitt team that we predicted.
Really well-organised, you know, frustrating teams. They're time-wasting, I think, from minute one. You know, and obviously that paid dividends for them. Like, obviously, you know, it wasn't
game management. Game management, I believe.
Professionals at it. Tommy Hewitt seems to be, but yeah, it's wide open there. Obviously, P's getting their first win on the board as well. But this weekend will be an interesting one with Shells and Piemont as well to start early.
Yeah, and not just saying it because as you're here, and I know I always do kind of give the public service announcement of you are involved with Shells. But on a genuine note, P Shells Dublin Derby probably the standout fixture of the weekend. Now, that's not taken away. Bowes Athlone's also going to be a cracker as well.
Bowes Athlone last year was a great game. I'm sure it will be again, but I think for neutrals, watching Peas and Shells would be the one to watch at 5 p.m. on Saturday.
What is it about Peas and Shells? It always seems to be the bite in this one.
I think it's just a deep rooted thing. It's been there since 2011, since the league kicked off. Even before that, we played DWSL in, as Raheny down in St Anne's Park, kicking lumps out of each other, you know, and in Piemont Hospital. But it's just one of those things, you know, the kind of elements of just that bite and bitterness of a good Dublin rivalry is there. Obviously, Karen Duggan is probably the final one of the, you know, the old brigade, let's just say. And obviously then the likes of Rachel Pearl and the Well are still clinging on there from Raheny. So there is still that element, and we're always trying to get one up on each other. And I think we've both kept, you know, each other competitive across the league and over the years. So it's just one of those games that there's always that little bit of edge to it. Top quality players though as well, you know, a lot of Irish internationals underage and senior involved as well.
Yeah, it is great even to be able to say that in the domestic league. Erin McLaughlin scored last weekend, so you've seen Ireland international.
Exactly, Jess Fitzgerald is there obviously as well, you know, and then you've got multiple of underage Irish players at Shells now currently as well. But look, that's not to take away from other games across the league in Rovers Wexford, which I'm sure, you know, Wexford will be trying to redeem themselves. We keep saying that, they didn't obviously last week, but hopefully will, you know, and they're playing Rovers at 4 p.m. And then with Treaty DLR at 5 p.m. along with Galway and Cork at 5.
Yeah, Treaty first match of the season. They were idle for week one. Still very much an unknown quantity in terms of what Dominic Foley's going to bring to the league as well, but an exciting prospect.
Definitely. I keep harping on about Ciara McCormack and Mary Curtin down there, you know, behind the scenes have been pushing the women's game massively down the south of Ireland, and you know, two established footballers in their own right at international level and collegiate level as well, and they're looking to do great things. I'm sure they're pushing that massively this week to try and get bums on seats as well, down in Limerick. So yeah, look, it'll be a great affair, and hopefully a lot of spectators will get out to watch that.
Okay, let's round up. I want one word answers here, Becca. So, first match, 3 o'clock Saturday. Bowes Athlone, who's going to win?
Athlone 1-0.
Athlone 1-0. Rovers Wexford.
I think we could be going for another draw there.
Another draw.
Yeah, both goals.
Okay. A goal, hopefully a goal fest and a draw. Galway Cork then at 5 o'clock.
I think Galway will take that. 3-0.
Galway looking to make it 2 wins from 2. And then Peas Shells.
We go void on that? Or?
Yeah, okay. We'll skip over that. We're going to a fiercely contested battle. And then finally, will Treaty United get the first match of their season off to a winning start at home to DLR Waves?
I don't know. I think I'm going to go 2-1 DLR.
2-1 to DLR after good performance.
I'm only not giving you a result on the other one because I don't want to jinx ourselves.
I can understand that. That's completely fair. Listen, Becca, pleasure chatting as always. Thanks for popping in. Now, just before we do finish, it is time to announce the name of the lucky person that's going into tomorrow's draft, that amazing AXA prize. Massive congratulations to Siobhan Burke. who correctly told us that Rachel Blackmore was the first female jockey to win the Grand National. And the good news for everyone else is there is one more chance to enter on tomorrow's show before we reveal the big, big winner. Sinead, big thanks to Ronan and Laura Lee for working on this evening's show. Betta De Silva is up next on 2FM, so do stay tuned. Marie will be back with you at 6 tomorrow. Have a great weekend from myself and from all of the Game On team. It is bye for now, and we'll chat to you again.